The podcast network is supported by Neo.org, a social network with a purpose, to transform the world by enabling people to transform themselves, and Tony Kynaston, our first TPN patron. Become a TPN patron or a member of the TPN 500 by visiting tpn.thepodcastnetwork.com.
There's a way, such a better way, today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today there's a better way.
This is Rod Adams, and it's time for Atomic Show number 153. And with me this evening, I have Susie Hobbs, who is the creative force behind Pop Atomic Studios. And Susie, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Susie is a very creative young woman who has decided to turn her talent for art into a almost a one-woman campaign to help change the image that people have in their minds about nuclear energy. So, Susie, tell me a little bit about what inspired you to start Pop Atomic Studios.
Well, my dad is a nuclear engineer. So I grew up with the subject of nuclear energy and fission as a really kind of common subject and something I've always been comfortable with and, in fact, have been able to go visit power plants and explore with Geiger counters and learn about things in a really firsthand sort of way. And so during my liberal arts education, I realized that that was a really uncommon kind of perspective. And through a series of conversations with my dad and his friends, I just realized there was a space that needed to be filled. And so that's kind of my goal, is just to act as an intermediary between the people making the energy, who truly should be focused on making the energy, and then the people using the energy. There's a pretty big gap there. So I'm hoping I can fill it, at least partially.
So why did you not go into engineering?
That is a really good question. That was my projected path. I was supposed to attend Georgia Tech, just like my dad and my brother before me, and study engineering. But I've always been an artist ever since I was really young. And although I can do math and science pretty easily, it's just always been my calling. And my parents respected that and still supported me, despite maybe some level of disappointment.
You know, I once overheard my father say something about me when I was in college. He said, that boy could have been a great engineer. Because I tell people that I'm the product of a mixed marriage. My mother was an English teacher, and my father was an electrical engineer. And when I went away to college, I told everybody I was going to be an engineer, and I wanted to go study electrical engineering at the Naval Academy. And I met the professors at the electrical engineering department and immediately switched and decided to be an English major.
That's so funny. Well, my mom is a social worker, so I understand being kind of caught between two worlds.
So where did you get your formal art training? Because I can tell that you're not just an amateur at this.
Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina.
Are those the folks that had the wonderful football
we are the
happening?
The absolute underdog champions. Yes.
Now, were you still in school at that time?
I was, actually.
That must have been an exciting period to be at Appalachian State College. Now, who did you beat? I can't remember. Michigan?
Michigan. Right? Yeah.
Right.
Beat Michigan. Yeah, it was a very fun time to be there.
Yeah, I've heard some stories. I think that for a while there was a meme around the internet, people trying to get sweatshirts from Appalachian State College so they could they could wear them in front of their Michigan buddies.
That's funny.
So talk a little bit about Pop Atomic Studios and what you kind of have planned or what you've done so far.
Well, so far we, and by we, I have probably about a dozen friends who are contributing in different ways at this point in time, who are scattered all over the country. And we've developed a website and an online store, and we are working on getting a physical space to have a community studio and kind of an educational resource center. But that's really dependent on getting some bigger projects and funding and things like that before we can really quit our day jobs. So we're really in transition at this point. You know, we've established a presence, but we're not yet fully developed, I would say.
Now, you've had some success, I think, in getting some contracts. I think you were doing something for Arriva recently on Earth Day, didn't you?
Yes, I did just help with their Earth Day campaign, which was a really great experience, and hopefully will lead to more opportunities to kind of lighten up and bring new life to some of the web presence that already exists. But the real long-term goal is to start doing some real physical public artwork with energy companies on reactor sites. And my dad is almost embarrassed that that's what I'm trying to do. He's like, no one's going to let you paint their cooling tower. Please, please don't say that to people in the industry.
Now, but aren't there painted cooling towers somewhere else?
There are. There's one in South Africa, and I think there may be one in Europe as well. So it's been done, but I think they were all decommissioned at the time of their painting. So I hope to bring some color to functioning reactors, which will pose a lot of challenges.
I could have sworn that I've seen, maybe it was just somebody's photoshopping, but it had a smiley face on the side of a cooling tower.
I've seen that image. I think that that was photoshopped, but it's not a bad idea.
Now, of course, I'm also in favor of the idea that nuclear plants could be designed to be far less imposing and far less scary, just if somebody paid a little attention, because they don't have to have things like, you know, ugly smokestacks and whatnot.
I agree. I think Bob Hargraves sent me some images of some plants, and I think they were somewhere in the Middle East, but they were beautiful, you know, architectural buildings that were functioning plants. And I think that there should be a lot of consideration for that in the future, and as well as retroactively going in and trying to kind of bring new context to existing plants, especially the ones that are getting relicensed right now. You know, if they're going to be online for another 40 years, let's, you know, create some sense of community outreach in those spaces, especially while we have the spotlight with reprocess or relicensing, rather.
Yeah, some of the plants that are going through the relicensing process have sailed right through, but there have been a few up in the Northeast where some folks have decided to take action to try to shut them down, even though they're some of the most reliable and high-performing plants in the whole fleet.
It's true. It's really unfortunate. I think it's the result of a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding. And so kind of my goal is to create a positive focal point so that we can create a new dialogue that's not focused on, you know, past problems or people's fears, but, you know, like collaborations between power plants and artists and community members and outreach and education, you know, that kind of takes some of the fever away from those very few people who are speaking out very loudly.
Yes, and that's always a shame when you have a few people. It's so much easier to say no and to fight something than to actually create something and to make it valuable and to listen to people's inputs and feelings and try to help them understand why you're so excited about this technology.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think it takes a lot of courage to actually support something in this world. You know, everybody's against everything, it seems. So definitely shifting that would be a huge step for nuclear.
You know, one of the things that I keep thinking back, there's a bit of technological history that indicates that some really disruptive technologies generally take 30 to 40 years before they really take off, because it doesn't happen until somebody who has been around it their whole life and is exceedingly comfortable with the ideas, you know, becomes a professional themselves and starts moving. So it sounds like, you know, I've met several folks at the ANS student convention who are second and in some cases even third generation nukes.
Absolutely. I did as well. And I also at that conference found that these younger generations of engineers and second and third generation engineers see public perception as one of the biggest problems they face. Whereas, no offense to anyone specifically, some of the older industry guys seem to think that just not having an accident is enough. But I think being safe is very important and paramount, but we also have to go beyond that and do outreach and really actively pursue improving public perceptions if we want the industry to continue to grow.
Yeah, I get very uncomfortable when I hear leaders say, well, we're great until we get to one accident, and then they'll shut us down. Because I've been around human beings all my life, a lot of human beings, and know that on occasion we do make mistakes. And our competition certainly seems to be able to accept the fact that there are occasional accidents. Yes, you work hard to minimize the chances, and certainly nuclear energy has done a great job of minimizing the chances and minimizing the consequences of making mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still humans, and we're going to make some mistakes now and again. I mean, in the last 3 months, the natural gas industry blew up a plant. Mm-hmm. The coal industry, you know, collapsed a mine and exploded a mine, and the oil industry is now fighting an offshore oil spill that killed 11 people already, and it looks like it's going to have some significant long-term environmental damage.
Well, and I think that that's kind of the power of public perception and expectations. You know, at this point, it's understood that fossil fuels cost lives and people don't question it. And it's also understood that nuclear isn't safe and people don't question that. And it's unfortunate because we don't have to rely on fossil fuels and we do have clean, safe, reliable technologies. And it's just a matter of kind of shifting those expectations.
One of my theories is that the reason people accept the accidents from coal, oil, and natural gas is that they also have been taught the advantages of having those compared to not having them.
Absolutely.
If you only have wood as your fuel source, you become a caveman again. Or, you know, you live in a very poverty-stricken developing country, and you see pictures of people carrying firewood on their head.
And I think it's okay to be pro-electricity. You know, electricity saves lives. You can't have hospitals. It's hard to have clean water. You know, there are really, like you said, basic tools of civilization that are born of having electricity. And I think it's important as, you know, these developing nations seek a foundation that we can help provide clean energy solutions rather than just more burning of fossil fuels. It's not reasonable to suggest that countries should just not be able to develop in the same way that we've been able to. And it really is our responsibility to help them do that in a better way than we did, because we actually have the resources.
Yeah, I'm kind of in favor of helping them leapfrog over fossil fuels directly to small modular nuclear power plants, sort of like they leaped over wired telephones.
Agreed, absolutely.
Yeah, because you don't need to go through fossil fuels to get to nuclear.
You really don't.
You may not be somebody, you may not be a country who can actually build your own fuel supplies and stuff, but if somebody else provides you with a reactor, operating it's not that hard to learn.
And I think that the small modular reactors are going to change everything. And it's just a matter of time. But I think climate change really puts the burner under us in terms of getting it together and getting that technology out there and getting through licensing. And I think public perception, again, plays a major role in licensing and the speed at which we can kind of pull these projects together.
Quite a bit younger than I am. What do your compadres, your friends, think about climate change? I mean, amazingly enough, a focused credibility attack campaign seems to have had a major effect among my generation, and I think they're a bunch of idiots, but that's okay.
No, it affected my generation as well. My older brother, who is in fact a chemist for a quote-unquote green company, the other day was just saying how he wasn't that concerned with climate change, and it kind of blew my mind. But it is affecting young people. I think there's also an issue happening with green consumerism, where, especially in my community here in Asheville, North Carolina, people buy a lot of green products and therefore really feel like their job is done. And it's like kind of the end of the conversation. Like, well, I drive a hybrid, so.
Yeah, but the funny thing is they seem to have forgot the first word of the three R's, reduce.
Exactly.
Reuse, recycle.
Right. It's going to take major shifts in our thinking in the way that we produce and consume energy to actually slow down climate change. So, and in my opinion, it's worse than ever. I think that, you know, although the research hasn't caught up to us to prove this theory, a friend of mine who's a biologist and I have talked at length about the possibility that the melting ice caps are putting increased pressure on tectonic plates in the ocean, contributing to the increase of earthquakes we've seen. And we did talk to a geologist who did some rough numbers and thought that it was very feasible. And we just don't actually have the hard research to back that idea up. But it could be that climate change has progressed in a way that we didn't anticipate and is actually further along than we ever realized. And people are feeling like it's not as big of a deal simultaneously, which is very troubling.
Yeah, and I have I don't have mixed emotions. I have very strong negative emotions about the idea of drilling a hole 8,000 feet into the ground, turning the pipe horizontal and making it look like a perforated hose, and then injecting water at high pressure and thinking that's not going to have any effect on the stability of the Earth's crust.
Agreed.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. You want to break the rocks underneath your feet. Why?
Yeah, I agree that it's just not very wise. We've already pushed our luck a lot, and I think we need to start respecting Mother Nature. And really, you know, I guess on one of your recent blog posts, you were talking about how you just love vision. And I feel the same way. You know, it's like this incredible gift, and it's probably the most important scientific discovery ever, and we really should be utilizing it, and it really is a natural process. And to not take advantage of that seems very foolish to me.
Well, I keep a couple of the fuel, the simulated fuel pellets on my desk. And every time I look, I wonder why I get up at oh dark 30 and write. I hold up this little pellet and say, a ton of coal. And that's when we're not doing it very well.
That's true.
You know, that it's a ton of coal at today's usage rate, which means we only use about 5%. So it could be 20 tons of coal.
It's true.
And I hold it between my thumb and my forefinger and I say, wow.
Yeah, I love the idea that my entire, you know, footprint could fit, you know, like in my bathroom under the sink or something. Like my entire environmental impact could be that small, or it could be, you know.
So you hide it behind your shampoo bottle.
Yes, exactly. Tiny. but it can also be huge. And depending on how you create that energy, that's the difference of, you know, how many hundreds of thousands of tons of carbon are released into the atmosphere, or a very, very small amount of material that can be easily and safely contained. So certainly I would prefer the second.
So have you ever seen some of the smaller reactors, any of the photos? One of the things that I think about from it, and I'm not artistic in terms of creating, but I really like to look at really well-created art. And I've seen some of the, like the fuel elements for the reactors that the Army built. And they're only, you know, a couple feet long, very shiny metal, and just, I mean, they're works of art. They're beautiful. And I've seen them for research reactors as well, where they're, because in research reactors, they're very careful about the neutrons. They actually curve the plates around, and you look at it and say, wow, that's kind of interesting. Have you ever seen any of that stuff?
I haven't seen that in person. I've seen images, and I agree. I find it awe-inspiring. A lot of the forms that serve, you know, incredible purpose in a reactor are really beautiful. And I think that's worth kind of sharing and working off of, because that's something that people can understand and relate to a lot more easily than, you know, a fission reaction, for instance.
Yeah, fission, well, some of the cartoons that I've seen of fission have been pretty well done. Disney did a great cartoon back in the 50s called, I think, My Friend the Atom or something like that. But somebody had it at the student conference and actually showed it. It was really kind of cool. But something I'm going to send you an image of is the Advanced Test Reactor, the ATR. Now, of course, it's always funny when people give something a name like advanced, because as time goes on, you want to say, well, why is it so advanced when it was built in 1965?
But, right.
But the ATR, the cross-section ATR, is quite amazing because of the way it's designed to do very specific things, but all very curved and circular. And
I'm obsessed with radial symmetry. That's part of the draw for me of a lot of the structures, or the visible exterior structures of a reactor. It's just radial symmetry is kind of the most basic form. And to me, that just speaks as a canvas. It's something that wants to be, you know, colorful and decorated and engaging. And that seems to be a repeating symmetry in all things nuclear.
So how have you convinced a dozen other artists who probably didn't have nuclear engineers for fathers that you're not crazy?
Well, I called in a lot of personal favors initially, but then I did get a few dedicated friends to read Gwyneth Craven's book and, oh gosh, what's the other? Terrestrial Energy. I've been passing that one around. And
that's by Josh. Let's see, Terrestrial Energy is... Is that William Tucker's book?
That's him, yes, William Tucker. And the bottom line is, if you do your research, you're going to support nuclear energy. I mean, it's kind of like you can tell who's actually looked into it by who supports it. Because if you've actually really taken the time to learn about it, there's really not a way around it. You know, you end up being a supporter. So that's pretty much just the facts speak for themselves, and it's just getting them the books and convincing them to open them.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was involved in an email exchange with somebody who I respect very, very strongly, who just recently published an excellent book. But he was trying to defend an old friend of his, saying that I was questioning the man for is the man's integrity, because he calls himself chief scientist of Rocky Mountain Institute and he never graduated from college with any degree at all. So I don't understand how you can be a scientist without having completed some sort of academic discipline. But he was saying, well, the guy, he does good science and energy. And I said, how can he do good science and energy when he's been writing against nuclear energy since 1970?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to imagine somebody actually doing research about energy and still claiming that nuclear is not worth the effort.
Well, some people go into it with their minds made up. And I don't think that it's worth focusing a lot of attention on those people, because so many more people haven't made up their minds. And that's really who I see as my audience. You know, there are plenty of antis out there that would love to argue all day, but that's not really my prerogative. I don't think it should be anyone's prerogative. They can protest and run around and do whatever, and that's fine. But, you know, there's serious work to be done, you know, real scientists, real issues, and a lot of undecided people who need more information. So that's really the long-term goal, is to get to that demographic.
Yeah, and you using your art to at least get their minds opened a little bit, and mm-hmm. then when they get the open mind, you can hand them a book like Gwyneth Craven's Power to Save the World, or Bill Tucker's Terrestrial Energy, or Joe Shuster's Fossil Fools. I mean, there's some great books out there that really, and, you know, Stuart Brand's Whole Earth Discipline.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I mean, I feel like the good resources exist, and there's great engineers coming up with new energy ideas. And again, there's just this gap of getting these ideas to more people. And so...
So how do we convince engineers to be a little more open about sharing their knowledge and not talking down to people?
You know, there was one person I met at the conference, the American Nuclear Society Student Conference, a guy named Jim Bowen, who is, I guess, a PhD candidate at University of Cincinnati. And he had a gift. Like, he can sincerely talk about nuclear engineering and the industry and almost anything at any level. And I think there are those few people in the industry and people studying nuclear engineering now that really need to step forward. And I've kept up with him since the conference and hope to work with him to kind of hone in on those skills, because those are rare people, but I think that they're out there and they have a role to play. I can only go so far, seeing as I'm not actually an engineer by any means.
Well, that's okay. Neither am I.
Yeah.
I tell people that I just played one in the Navy.
Nice. Perfect.
You know, the old, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV, so.
Exactly. Yeah. My friend Virginia, who was at that conference with me, said, "We're just the nuclear groupies. We're just here to cheer for you guys."
That's terrific, because, you know, a lot of nukes are still in the mode that they've almost got their heads down and almost turtling to protect themselves. They don't necessarily realize that there are folks like you out there.
It's true. And that's also, I think, the advice that people are being given in a very real way, is to avoid criticism, avoid the hard questions and things like that. And I think there are better solutions. I think that we can engage in positive dialogue with, you know, everyday people about nuclear energy without scaring them. It's just going to take some work.
Well, you're right. There is that advice given. It wasn't but maybe 2 or 3 years ago that I was at an ANS meeting. And I generally go and attend and cover the meetings as press,
mm-hmm.
You know, because of Atomic Insights. And it took a while to convince ANS that Atomic Insights really was a publication. But anyway, they accept me as press. But so I walk around the meetings with a press badge, and I can't tell you how many of the young people at that meeting 2 or 3 years ago were afraid to talk to me. And,
well,
I mean, I sat them down and said, "Listen, I'm a nuke. Yes, I have a press badge, but I'm really in favor of this stuff. You know, don't be afraid."
I was asked, and I think, again, because I'm not an engineer, I was asked to go through the media training session. mm-hmm. at the conference, and they had a PR firm come in and basically teach everybody the tricks of politicians. This is how you avoid a question. This is how you, you know, change the subject. And I'm thinking, and no wonder people don't trust you.
Because nobody trusts politicians. Don't copy those guys.
Yeah, I mean, it was very enlightening to see that and say, okay, well, herein lies our problem. All these young people are being told to avoid the important questions rather than be prepared for them. Think about it in advance and come up with a really good response. But don't just skirt around the tough questions. We really owe it to the public to present solutions. And we have solutions, which is the more frustrating part. It's like, there is a really good answer to that question about waste or about Yucca Mountain or about this or that. And it's a matter of being prepared to answer it.
Yeah, I've been an anti-Yucca Mountain guy for quite a while because I always thought it was just silly to think about spending huge resources to move material, which is not hurting anybody where it is, put it someplace, you know, as far away from humans as you can find, and then say, well, maybe someday we'll want to use it, so we'll just build a recycling facility. And I said, who would want to live there and work there? Come on.
Well, and I agree, especially with that last part. It's still valuable material that can be reprocessed. So I think it's really preemptive to start storing it, you know. It's like, wait a minute. I think there's a lot of energy left in that waste. I don't know if waste is even the right word.
Well, I don't call it waste. I call it used nuclear fuel, sort of like a used car. Actually,
right.
It's lightly used. It's almost, what are the, I can't remember, pre-owned, I think, is what the Mercedes used dealers will call it.
Pre-owned uranium.
Yes, pre-owned uranium.
It'll still get you around. Still get your lights turning on.
That's right. That's right. And and the good thing is there are folks out there like Bill Gates who's looked at that as a huge resource. If you can figure out how to put that to good use without having to do a lot of physical processing of it.
Yeah, they're not doing a lot of support for the arts right now. I looked into that to get on that boat, but I think...
Well, you mean the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation?
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. But if you talk to Terra Power, maybe as a commercial company, they'd be interested in getting some artwork done for their advertisements as they go forward.
That's not a bad idea.
Now, are you, at Pop Atomic, are you thinking about doing commercial work for companies and advertising and that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. I think whatever gets me in the door and kind of gets art into the dialogue about how they're going to move forward with public relations. Because I think, you know, advertising very often is trying to sell you something that you don't really need and kind of trying to pull the wool over your eyes. And I think this is really a different scenario. It's kind of revealing the truth about a very beneficial technology, and I think it's going to require a different approach, especially because there are a lot of powerful negative images that exist already, and we're going to have to counterbalance those with a lot of really strong positive images.
And so maybe we'll have a series of commercials where you say, I'm a fission and I'm a combustion.
Yeah, you know, and I would totally be a spokesperson too. I mean, I live and breathe this. This is my passion. And so any way that I can promote it and get people involved and interested, I'm for it.
That's terrific. And I'm excited that there are people like you around. And one of the reasons I asked you to come on the show is to share your enthusiasm and see if we can find one or two more. And maybe we'll find one or two more after that.
I hope so.
Well, you're doing great work. I hope that you, I wish you the best of success, and we're going to keep in touch because I got some ideas for things that we could do together, and it's going to be fun. I like working on changing people's minds. A lot of my friends who were really focused on being engineers, they want to solve things like, well, if we could only come up with a good way to store renewable energy. And I say, well, why? I mean, I don't want to try to change physical laws. Those are too darn hard. It's a lot easier to think about changing public opinion because it does change, you know.
It certainly does, and especially when the fact of the matter is nuclear is our best option. So I think once we get people's interest, it's not going to be that hard.
I agree. So let's keep working at it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Rod.
Thanks for coming on, Susie, and take care.
Okay, you too.
All right, bye-bye. So how'd you like listening to Susie share her enthusiasm about atomic energy and the use of art to help people understand a little bit more about why some of us are so excited about the subject and its potential for improving the lot of human beings? If you want to find out more about Pop Atomic Studios, go to popatomic.org. That's popatomic.org. And find out what the studios are doing, what kind of art they're creating, and go buy a t-shirt. Take care.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. The way is the Adam's way.
You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.